first of all, ask to dedicate his money for a foolish thing for Tzipora Bas Bela Henna, who's having surgery tomorrow. Okay, so we're in Rus, the second paragraph. So we learned a little bit last time. So quick review was Rus was married to Elimelech, had two children, Machlon and Chelyon, and a famine came to Eretz Yisrael, and they left Eretz Yisrael. It seems to be that might have been part, Chazal said that was part of what they were punished for. They weren't supposed to have left, maybe because they were the leaders, they were the wealthy people, they should help support people, whatever exactly the details were. And they were punished. Elimelech died, and the two sons who had married Moabite women, Orpah and Rus, they also died. And as things got better in Eretz Yisrael, Naomi decided that she's going to return to Eretz Yisrael. And she her daughters-in-law, who I guess technically may not be her daughters-in-law anymore, but the wives that her sons had taken, tried to go along with her. And she tried to discourage them, which again seems to imply that they weren't Jewish, that they had already converted on some level. It's hard to imagine that she would try to convince them to stay in the country of Moab, which is not the best place for a nice Jewish girl. So it seems to be that they had not. Maybe that was part of the sin of the sons. They had married non-Jewish women. Again, in terms of what point in history we are in the period of the Shoftim. So again, after the Torah has already been given, and it's also not as late as some of the other stories that we have, like Megillas Esther. And in the end, Orpah turns back and she remains in Moab, but Rus decides that she is going to go together with her mother-in-law. And they return back, and when they arrive, everybody starts talking. Could this possibly be Naomi? This is the same person who had left with such riches and left so successful, and now she comes back without anything. She doesn't have a husband, doesn't have any children, she doesn't have any property. Chazal say that she didn't even have shoes. They were walking barefoot back into Eretz Yisrael, and she said to them, says, yes, it's me, but don't even call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Call me the embittered one, because Hashem has been harsh on me. And again, it doesn't seem like she was necessarily complaining about it. She was just stating what the reality was. And the reality was that she had a very hard life. So now she returns to Beis Lechem, and that's where the second parak picks up. And it says, page 1,270 in the back of the stone, Chumash, Naomi Modal Isha, Yishki Borchayim, Mishpachas Elimelech, Ushmo Boaz. So again, beginning of Parak Beis, Naomi comes, and there's a man who's there. It's a Modal, an interesting language, and it basically means a relative, somebody known to her, somebody who's close to her. This man who was a Gibor Chayo, a strong man, from a family of Elimelech, Ushimo Boaz. And his name is Boaz. So again, the Megillah here is introducing to us this wealthy man, Ish Chayo, Ish Gibor Chayo, is the idea of Chayo is the same types of characteristics that Moshe Rabbeinu had listed in terms of when he was looking for judges. It implies a person of stature. And it's a person filled with midos tovos and stature. And this was this person, a relative from the Shpacha, within the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. Now, what was their relationship? So it was actually a very close relationship. You need a little bit more than just the psukim here, but Chazal fill in for us that he is related both to Naomi and to Elimelech. And that's going to be sort of important, meaning it wasn't only a relationship to Elimelech, who's the husband who passed away of Naomi, but also related to Naomi. Now, how will that be? So Rashi explains that Elimelech had a few brothers. One brother was Salmon, and the other brother was, who we'll introduce to later, but we'll have to figure out who exactly he is, but Ploni Almoni, right? Mr. So-and-so, who remains nameless in the Megillah, although he's going to play a very important role later on. Salmon, who's Elimelech's brother, is Boaz's father. So Boaz is the nephew of Elimelech. What?
And Ploni,
correct. There was a fourth brother as well, And that one, who we also don't seem to necessarily know who the name was, at this point at least, was Naomi's father. So they were all brothers. So Elimelech was Naomi's
uncle.
I guess it's wrong. It's an uncle. Maybe I described it wrong.
Yeah.
No. Elimelech, Salmon, Ploni, Almoni, and Naomi's father were all brothers. So uncle. So Naomi is the niece of Elimelech. She married her uncle, which again, according to the Torah, is perfectly permitted. So but that's also how Boaz is related to both Elimelech and to Naomi. To Elimelech, Boaz is a nephew. To Naomi, it's a first cousin. Kind of just who the characters are. So that's is what introduces that Naomi has this relative who is this important stature, it's interesting that when the Megillah describes it, it focuses more on the mishpacha of Elimelech, but his name is Moab. His name is Boaz. Too much Moab going on. His name is Boaz. Now what exactly the purpose of this pasuk is not really clear, because I mean, normally we would introduce somebody right before that person is going to enter the store, and he's going to come soon, but he's not here right now. It's going to describe that she's going to go out looking, and she's going to end up in the field. She's looking for food, and she's going to end up with the different matnos anim, the things that the poor person is allowed to take. She's going to end up searching, and she's going to end up in the field of Boaz. But almost in advance, the Megillah is describing to us who Elimelech is. And the possible explanations, the first one is just that, okay, so Megillah is just informing us now, at the opening of the parak, this is going to be something which is important. And the truth is that it's not only going to be important in the next few psukim, but it's really important in terms of the whole way the whole story is going to develop, because we need to figure out in the end how it is, what are all the events that are going to lead to Boaz marrying Ruth. So all of that, somehow we need to be introduced to all those details in order that later it should be able to play out in a way that makes sense. But it could also be that it's expressing a little bit of a question that may be lingering in the mind of Naomi, which would be, if he has this close relative who's there, who's an upstanding member of the community we're going to see soon, is very wealthy, and she's coming, the embittered one, lost her husband, lost her children, doesn't even have a pair of shoes according to Chazal, so why doesn't he just help her? It's her first cousin, they're pretty close. Her uncle was her husband. They seem to have this very tight relationship, and yet he doesn't step up to the plate, and he doesn't greet them right away and invite her in. It's only through we'll see how the story develops, but it's in their most almost indirect way that they end up even meeting. So maybe that the Megillah is sort of highlighting something which is going on in the background in the mind, which maybe as the ones reading it and learning it were wondering why that should be, and now maybe in the back of her mind is also wondering, and help me out a little bit there.
Well, she didn't ask, right?
No, she didn't ask. She didn't ask. But maybe she's at least trying to think. Am I that bad that even this close relative isn't stepping up?
She's Mara.
She is, but it doesn't mean that she has to settle play the role. Meaning she's accepting of her lot, but on the other hand, she could still be wondering that. We don't think she's questioning God, but if there's somebody here who could step up, maybe he should. It's not, again, she doesn't say it. She's not formulating it as a complaint, but it could be that something which is in the the back of her mind. Now the answer could be that Boaz didn't know about this whole thing. He doesn't even know that she showed up. Again, it seems that some word was spreading as they showed up at the end of Perek Aleph, but maybe Boaz wasn't amongst the gossipers, and he didn't know who's coming, who's going, and all the stories of what's going on. And without, and if Naomi would have knocked on his door and said, "Please, cousin Boaz, please help me out," maybe he would have invited her in and stay for as long as you need, and I'll help you get back onto your feet. Maybe Boaz just had no idea, and then there's no way.
Well, maybe the way that they left town, so to speak. Mardik.
That could be also. It could be that as a community, they've basically taken to shun them and push them aside. They abandoned the Jewish people in their time of need. The famine was coming. They had money and they left with all their finances, and nobody wanted to be a part of it. And certainly, that could be it as well. It could also be
she was too proud.
That's why, right? No, that would explain why she didn't. But why didn't Boaz? So again, then the other possibility is that maybe he was just too busy. As we're going to see soon, he was very busy. It was the harvesting season. He's sleeping, and we'll see later on. He's sleeping in the fields. He's not involved in anything else. Right now is the time where he has to worry about his crops for the upcoming year. Well, the different possibilities, but again, it could be that the McGill wants to sort of put us into the mindset of thinking about this issue. So what happens in Pasuk Beis? Batoma Rus Moavia El Naomi. So Rus, the Moabite woman, says to her mother-in-law Naomi, Elcha no hasodeh v'alakto v'shivolim achar asher mtzachin be'inov v'tomer lo l'chi biti. I should go and go out into the field and be able to take from the different things, the grains that are growing, and hopefully somebody, I'll find favor in somebody's eyes, that they'll be generous and I'll be able to have some food for us. So it seems to be, first of all, that Rus is a knowledgeable woman just in terms of halacha, and she knows that there are matnos aniyim, and there are certain things that a poor person is entitled to. You can't just, an average person can't just go show up in somebody's field and start taking just because it's only a little bit. We call that stealing. But if she knows, and she probably, Naomi probably taught, again, if she was, already was, had gone through a process of geirus, which
she
gets.
Right, so the Moaviyah is interesting. It could be the Moaviyah is stressing, again, what the Chazal tells us what's going on in the background,
which is that the Torah tells us that lo yavo amoni Moaviv v'kal Hashem, that we're not allowed to accept a ger from Ammon and from Moav. And although the Torah has been given already, the drasha that it's only talking about the men from Moab, but it's not talking about the women from Moab, and women from Moab are allowed to be accepted, has not been, or maybe even revealed. Uh-huh. It could just be, again, this was something which was left as part of, it was the original intent of God was there, but again, it was the Bezdim, whether it was a Boaz, or at some point soon, that was possibly, maybe they were even in the middle of discussing the issue, but it was not something which was 100% accepted yet. And as such, she sort of had this dual existence, because she was distanced a little bit, perhaps because she was a Moabiyah. But on the other hand, it's very clear from the Pasuk that she knew what was going on, and she knew the halachas, and she knew she was allowed to go, and she could take from the corner of the field, and she could take from what was forgotten, and she could take from what fell down, all the different halachos of the Matnos Aniyim. Apparently, she had learned. Naomi, gave her good lessons, you know, if she wants to become a Jewish woman and come back with her, so you need to know certain things. And again, immediately relevant is where they're going to have dinner, where they're going to have any food from. So, the only difficulty with that is why does she say that she's hoping that she's going to find, that somebody will find favor, that she'll find favor in somebody's eyes? If it's just talking, if all she wants is the matnos aniyim, the owner can be as upset as possible. This is what the poor people are entitled to, and against the will of the owner, they can go into somebody's field and take the food. So it could be she wants to sort of start with that, and she's hoping, you know, there might be other aniyim there, so I might not do so well. But again, it's an interesting juxtaposition within the same pasuk, but this is what she's saying, that the one that I'm going to take the matnos aniyim, but I also hope to find favor in somebody's eyes. And then Naomi very tersely just tells her, okay, l'chi biti, go and good luck. And whether she was giving her stamp of approval or whether she was reluctantly agreeing isn't so clear. It's a very quick response. And some of the Mefarshim point out that it could be she wasn't so thrilled with the idea that that going into the field was not necessarily the best place for a good Jewish girl. And as we'll see from the warnings that Boaz gives to his workers to leave her alone, the implication would be that the workers did not always behave that way. And therefore, maybe Naomi wasn't thrilled with the idea. But on the other hand, if she's willing to go
and we have absolutely nothing to eat. We're sort of stuck in a difficult situation. So she says, okay, at least you should go, and best of luck. Vatelech vatavo vatilaket vasoden. She goes and she arrives. She goes and she arrives and she picks them from the field. Acharei kotrim, following after the ones who are doing the harvest, which again is the way it sounds like from the Torah that the aniyim would do it. That as the harvesters miss certain things, again depending on the exact details of the halachos, then the potential for the poor people to be able to take that would exist. Vayiker mikrea chelkas asadel vawaz, and she happens to end up coincidentally. Vayiker is supposed to imply that it's almost like a coincidence in the field of Boaz. Asher mimishpacha salimach, I don't think that it's a different Boaz. It's that very same Boaz that we were introduced to in Pasuk Aleph, the one that comes from the family of Elimelech. So Chazar right away pick up on the beginning of the Pasuk, Vatelech vatavo. And again, a very, very quick movement that she went and immediately she arrived. So Rashi says something which seems to be insignificant. Basically says it was like a Hansel and Gretel kind of thing. That she marked her path so that she would know how to get back. Vatelech vatavo. As she was going, she made sure that when she arrived, she had a place to get back. Why? So what? What's the significance of that? So perhaps it helps us understand a little bit of, again, a lot of this is based on Shua Bacharach's work and on Rav Rivlin from Karen Biavna. I just tried to put a lot of it together. But perhaps what it reflects a little bit is to try and appreciate her state of mind. And she had a certain nervousness that she didn't know how this was going to go. And if she needed to escape in a hurry, if things weren't going right, or if she was being attacked or whatever else might happen there, she was prepared to run as fast as possible, and she needed to know how to go. And her state of mind going in was a very fragile one, and this nervous one, not knowing what was going to be. She was putting herself really out on the line to try and save herself and her mother-in-law.
Well, maybe that's why the Moabiyah is there.
That might be the Moabiyah. So
she's even nervous. She's got this scarlet tree on her, so to speak. As she's going in, like, you don't, not only, you know, you don't belong here, you're not even Jewish, like, they might really give her a hard time.
Not just a hard time, they might throw her out, they might say you're not entitled to it.
Right.
No, the halacha is, I have to get to the Daniyim to take this. If somebody who's not an ani takes this, I have responsibility to protect this for the poor people. Maybe you're not even entitled to it, 100%. That could certainly be a part of it. And then it says something which, again, to see in the Megillah is almost strange, Vayikar Mikra, it happened, it was a coincidence. We know quite well that the coincidences are orchestrated by God, but it almost highlights the fact that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind the scenes in everything that's going to happen now. And as much as they didn't know what was going to happen, God's already almost in a sarcastic sense say, okay, you know, coincidentally you're going to end up in Boaz. It's a sign that things are starting to move, hopefully, a little bit in the right direction. This is the first, you know, glimmer of hope that the place where she ended up is something that they're connected to. Now, whether how Boaz is going to react to all this, we have no idea. But if there's somebody who's going to have some rachmanas, if somebody's going to have some pity on them, then Boaz is the right place for her to be. Fine. So the Megillah continues. Vihine Boaz ba mi beis lechem vayomer lakotrim Hashem imachem vayomru lo yivarecha Hashem. And Boaz comes from beis lechem, and he says to the ones who are harvesting, God should be with you. And they say to him, yivarecha Hashem. Hashem should bless you. Again, we saw this a little bit in the first parak, that usually the language of vihine and behold connotes that there's some sort of surprise, that this wasn't something which was expected. And it seems to be that Boaz didn't necessarily always come out to the field and supervise what was happening. He was, you know, the wealthy plantation owner, and he didn't have to sit out there. He had his coats for him, and he came out, and he let them do their work. And here, again, for some reason, out of the ordinary, and maybe this is in a certain sense similar to the Vayikar Mikreha, that's something which just happens out of the ordinary, that here also, the fact that Boaz even shows up at the field at the same time that Ruth is going to be there is not something which would normally happen, But again, there's something which is going on here. Vayomer Boaz l'na'aro hanitzav al hakotzrim l'mi hana'aro hazos. So Boaz says to his young man who's with the kotzrim, who does this girl belong? It seems like a very strange question. It's a very strange pasuk. They're talking about one of the gedolei hador. He's going to show up in his field and like, hey, who's that girl over there? It's almost as bad as these guys going to weddings now. Okay. I opened the bad box.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be only based on who's that girl over there because of externals.
It should start somewhere.
Okay.
Exactly.
What happened?
No one notices the personality from across the room.
Okay. but that doesn't play out well for many a girl. Anyway. It seems strange that we can discuss more later.
We have a lot more to discuss.
I'm happy to discuss. He's one of the gedolei hador. It seems like a very very strange question. And Rashi in the Gemara Shabbat says it already. Gemara Shabbat Nafkav Yigimel of Alf said, did he always ask that? Whenever he showed up in the field, did he start asking who's that girl? Who does this one belong to? Again, what was the purpose of his question?
Well, also, was it usual for women to come to get the poor women to come, or was it usually?
It seems like it wasn't totally out of the ordinary because, again, he tells them to tell them soon to leave her alone. It seems like that there definitely were other women there. I don't know if it was only women that were there, but it doesn't seem like it was totally out of the ordinary.
I think it's a testimonial too that she obviously had a different comportment than the average girl.
Correct. That's what the Medrash says. The Medrash says that he saw something about her was very special. That he looked beyond the externals, and that's what he noticed.
No, he saw the externals across the room.
And that he noticed that she wasn't acting like the other women, that whatever the details were, I think in the Beis Yaakov they elaborate on the story a lot. As she bent down, whatever it is. But the Medrash does comment that she acted with a tremendous amount of tzniyas. Now, it could be in her approach to the people, it could be in her aggressiveness. There are a lot of different ways in which her tznius would be obvious. The Medrash says one of the things was that a lot of the other women would spend more of their time talking to the kotzrim and then spending time gathering what they needed, and she stayed to herself. She took care of what she needed to take care of. Additionally, saw that she was very careful about what she took. Again, that goes beyond the tzniyas. That's the question of stealing. You know, once we're allowed, okay, what's the difference if the halacha is that if more than a certain number of stalks fall at the same time, then it's not considered to be matnos aniyim anymore, and the owner is allowed to come back and pick them up. And she was very meticulous to the halacha. No, if this is what I'm entitled to, this is what I'm entitled to. And if there's one more, it's not just, okay, it's one more, what's the big deal? It is a big deal. It doesn't belong to me. If the owner gives it to me, then I'm allowed to take it. If not, it's stealing. And she had a very different way. And then also the Medrash does mention, the Beis Yaakov didn't mention up, that the other girls would pick their dresses up as they were walking through, and she did not do that. But whatever it is, there was a reason for his question. I heard that from my wife. I haven't been to a Beis Yaakov either.
They didn't say.
You can also, okay. Right, that's what she told me. She told me how they bent down. So I think that's, maybe that's, I guess that's trying to explain, like, if she wasn't picking her dress up, so how did she do it? Yeah. I'm not sure that the image goes into such detail. I don't recall. Maybe it's here.
She was very careful how she did whatever she did.
Does it have the exact measures?
First of all, the dresses were longer than
that. But like, let's say they gathered the stuff in there.
Right, they had to.
And then they had to pick it up to carry it.
Right. Yeah,
Why would they need to
wear them?
probably a million layers anyway. Not like today.
Okay. The Midrash doesn't elaborate on the exact details of it, but okay. Either way, she stood out in being different than everybody else, and that was the reason for the question that Boaz asked. So what was the response? Pasuk Vav Vayana Nara Nitzav Al Kosim Vayamar, and he answered Boaz, and he says Naara Moaviyahi, she's a Moabite woman, Hashava Im Naomi Miste Moab, who returned with Naomi from the fields of Moab. So I mean, the pasuk doesn't tell us too much. He's telling us fact. Now, whether it is a praise of her, whether it's to try and denigrate her as being she's not one of us. She's a Moabite woman. She came from the fields of Moab. But on the other hand, you're just telling him what the facts are. Listen, she is a Moabite woman. She came from the fields of Moab, and she came back with Naomi. Now, in Boaz's mind right now, you have to sort of try and picture that, you know, now the cogs begin to turn. Because maybe he didn't know until now that Naomi had even returned. But now he knows. And now he sees that she brought back with her this very special woman. And presumably she didn't become this special woman on her own. But now Naomi is back. And maybe there's we need to figure out a way to be able to help her. Vatomer alaktona vasa. And then he continues, and he says that and she had told him, meaning he's continuing in his description of her, that please let me gather for her. And she's been here the entire day. She's been working very, very hard to collect food. Vayomer Boaz Arus. So Boaz doesn't waste any time. Right away, he turns to Rus and addresses her directly. Halo shamat biti al talchi lekot b'steacher. Listen to me. Don't go together in anybody else's field. The ganlo savur mizeh. Don't leave from here. The chosid bakinim na arusai. Stay here together with my maidens. Keep focused on this field which you're harvesting. Follow the other girls who are here, and I've ordered the young men not to touch you. And then if you get thirsty, go get some water from what the Na'arim have, what the other servants have brought. So he basically welcomes her to his field and says, please take what you need, have something to drink, don't work so hard. And right away, he's trying to be very friendly. Even the fact that he says, BT, my daughter. Again, he's trying to say that we do have this relationship. Don't think I've totally forgotten about the fact that your mother-in-law is my first cousin, that she was married to my uncle. We have this, we do have this closeness. And don't leave my field. Don't think that it's coincidental that God sent you here. This is your, again, this is what Rus was hoping for when she had said that, hope to find favor in the eyes of somebody in the field. And it came true. Don't think it's all coincidental. Don't let these boys bother you. Stay with my Na'aros. Now, who are these girls? Who are these maidens who were hanging out in his field? So on the one hand, the first initial reaction is that there were certain women who used to probably come, and they were the poor women who would come. And the same way, the Shnorers usually follow the same route. So these people also, they came the same route, they had the same routine, and they would come back on a constant basis. So they didn't have any special relationship with him. But he said the same way these women are, I allow them to keep coming through, and they come through every day. So stick together with them. But it's clear from the continuation that there was something that they worked more in the context of the actual harvesting. That they were doing the harvesting. The poor people weren't really the ones who were doing the harvesting. They were, you know, picking here and there. So it sounds like they weren't just schnurrers. But I guess somehow he wanted to make sure that he had girls who were working there also. I wanted to provide work for people who needed it, and regardless of who they were. But at the same time, he says, I see that you're very, you have certain sensitivities, you're staying away from the men. I'm telling them they have to leave you alone, so stick with the girls. The men aren't going to bother you, you have nothing to worry about. Please stay here. And again, he wants to express to her that don't just think you're like any other poor person that comes in. You're allowed to drink whatever the male servants bring up. You're certainly entitled to that as well. Now for Ruth, this is a major change. Now she goes from the person who's been totally shunned, who's been the Moaviyah, who's been on the outside, and this is the first time that anybody from the outside has begun to actually try to draw her close and has been accepting of who she is. The Medrash understands that when he told her not to go to a deeper field, not to go to another field that's even on a deeper level, and he was telling her that I see that you've begun to absorb from Naomi what a Jewish life is about. Stick into the field, stick to the people who are here, and they'll teach you more. They'll help in terms of your spiritual growth. They'll be able to teach you even more, and you'll be able to again move further along this path that you're trying to go on.
Okay, but your question pops up more now. Now he knows who she is,
mm-hmm.
and instead of saying, "Okay, don't go to the field. Period. We'll send you home with a care package." Like, why is he sending her back out to do this hard labor now that it's been revealed what Chassid has said? She's, now you can't plead dumb anymore.
And then say, "Hey, where's Naomi? Let her come."
Right. That's the difficult question. That's the thing that we're going to have to try to understand, is why he didn't open up to Naomi. Why he didn't send her back? I don't know.
Like, he was being nicer, but in the context of, okay.
Right. He didn't want to change everything. Now, whether that was because he wouldn't know that if she would want to just be taking, right. Although she's taking charity anyway. She's taking charity anyway.
And Naomi technically is his aunt.
His first cousin.
But it's also his aunt.
Oh, through marriage.
Was his uncle.
Okay. Correct.
It's his aunt and first cousin.
Right. There seems to be a lot which is going on here, and it could be, again, as we'll see, there was more to it, whether he was plotting this all now or he was still trying to figure out what to do. There's more to his plan than what he's revealed up until this point. So, again, these are all important questions. Let's see if we can...
Right, we'll give him a few minutes.
Right, right, right.
There's
a few more minutes.
Maybe it takes a little time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
First meeting.
Especially men.
Oh boy, okay. But she falls off by now, she falls on her face, but she stops hard, and she bows down, but told my love, "Madua matas yechein benachala kireini v'anochi nachriya." Now, if you think about this, maybe this is the beginning of the answer to that question. What does Ruth say right now? It says, "I don't understand. Why are you being so nice to me? Why everybody else has been pushing me aside?" So you can only imagine how much more she would be overwhelmed if he says, "No, don't even stay in the field anymore. Come, move in with Naomi, hang out in my house." So it could be that there was a gradual process. Again, this was a drastic change for her. She's never been accepted by anybody, and again, ever since she left Moab. So right now already she's trying to figure out, she's totally overwhelmed, she falls on her face and she says, I don't even know what to say. Why are you being so nice to me? Everybody else is pushing me aside and you're trying to bring me closer. The Medrash says that it was at this point that a baskol came out and told Boaz that in fact the halacha is that a Moabite woman is allowed to convert. And that as there was, again, a lot going on right now, they needed to, Boaz couldn't remember what the halacha is, and maybe that was part of him keeping her at a distance also, is that he's not sure, again, until now, maybe, what her status is halachically. She certainly seems to be a very righteous woman, but that doesn't make her Jewish. And if the Torah is not going to allow, the Torah doesn't allow it. Again, all these things are sort of going on at the same time. So Boaz responds, "Van pasigid alav vayan Boaz vayomer la." Boaz says to her, Hugeid Hugadli Kola Shara Sitas Hamoseich Achare Mosi Sheikh Batazi Avich Vemech Eretz Molatech Batelchi Alama Sheloyedat Moshe Sham. It's been told to me all the chesed, all the amazing things that you did for your mother-in-law after your husband died, and that you abandoned your father, your mother, your birthplace, and you went to a nation that you never knew before. Yishalem Hashem Paleich, Hashem should repay what you've done. Usihim Askortei Shleimah Me'im Hashem Mokeisho Hashem Basach Zos Tachas Kanapav. And you should be rewarded for wanting to become part of the Jewish people. Now where exactly he knew all this from is very unclear. Whether it was simply that there was more to what the Nahar told Boaz. Again, the Megillah already told us more than we would expect, that this girl who had come back from Moab, who was with Naomi. So it could be that there was even more to that, but the Megillah doesn't need to repeat that for us, because we know it already. In terms of recording, in terms of the text, again, all these conversations probably had more than was going on. But again, in terms of the story, it's not important for us to list it again and again, every detail. So it could be that Nahar said that. Again, if it was all the way back at the beginning, so then it is a little bit difficult. Maybe he just, you know, sometimes seeing is believing, and he heard this. But people spread rumors, and people tell stories all the time. But once he sees that, in fact, she is this amazing person, and he heard all this, now it all fits together. It makes sense that she really did such a thing, and she deserves to be blessed for it. And she says to him, and she continues to find favor in your eyes, because you've consoled me, you've comforted me. You've spoken to my heart. Even though I'm not as worthy as one of your other maidservants. So what exactly was the consolation? What did he say that consoled her? The simple understanding probably is just the fact that he brought her close, that finally somebody was accepting of her, and that she had lived this life as an outsider, and now he finally welcomes her in. That's a major change. That's something which was what she was looking for. She wanted to be accepted. She wanted to be part of Klal Yisrael. And now he says, come, I see that you've tried to join Klal Yisrael. Hashem should repay you for and reward you for that. By Yomer LaBoaz, now Boaz says to her, "Leisa ochel goshi alom v'chalt min alechem etaval pitech v'chometz v'teisha mitzara kotsim v'itzbat l'koli v'tocha v'tisba v'tosar." And Boaz says to her, "You know the meal time is coming. Come over here and have something to eat. Take some bread, dip your bread." And she ate next to the people who were doing the harvesters. So again, basically, again, showing again caring for her, offering her some dinner, a little bit to eat. The Alshich comments here, and again, maybe this is answers some of the questions that we were struggling with earlier. That Boaz realized that he needed to play a very balanced role here. Because on the one hand, he wanted to do chesed with her, and on the other hand, he didn't want to give the impression and have people think that he's basically trying to take advantage of this young, vulnerable girl who came and she doesn't have anything, and he's trying to sweep her off her feet. And he wants to make it clear that there is something more going on here, and he has to do that, and that's why it sort of goes through this slow process, where he invites her to continue to collect in the field, to take more. Now he's telling her, you can eat dinner, but again, he doesn't want to invite her to move into the house yet, to bring Naomi, and again, he's slowly trying to fit in. It sounds like he didn't even sit next to her. She sat somewhere separate, not next to the kotsrim. But and she ate and was even able, probably something which was rare for her and was a new experience, was able to leave over food. Otherwise, what's the significance of the fact that the Megillah tells that she left it over? A poor person doesn't usually, other than leaving over food because they don't know where the next meal is going to come from. Here she was able to fill herself and yet have enough to be able to leave food over.
Or maybe she left over so that she could take back some almonds.
Maybe. Vatokam lelakeid, she got up to glean some more. Vayitza Boaz es narav lemor gam bein amarim to lakeid v'lo sachimu. Let her go even among the sheaves wherever she wants. Don't bother her. וגם שול תשילו לא מן הצפסים ועזבתם ולכתוב ולא סיגרו ולא סיגרו בא. And you should even try and then purposely pull some extra things out so she can take them. Don't give her a hard time. So why didn't he just give it to her? Why is he making her again? Right after he's bringing her closer, he seems to be distancing her again and not providing directly. He's making it easier for her, but she still has to earn her keep a little bit.
Well, maybe she was, like you said before, she wanted to accept it.
Right. So it seems to me that he's struggling with the this convoluted plan where he has to try and provide for us and at the same time be sensitive to her. And that she may not be ready. The same way she was so surprised that why are you giving me any special treatment, that too much might be too much for her to handle, and being overly generous is not the right time. The time will come. But again, this is all one day. This is all happening very, very quickly for her, and he doesn't want to cause any trouble. Again, as much as she's taking a handout, it's different when you work for it and you've gone through the field and taken it yourself versus, you know, just opening up your hand and being provided. So she continues to do it. However, she takes from the field, and she's picking in the field all the way until evening. And she sees how much she has, and it's an epho, which is a large measurement of barley. So again, she was she had a very successful day. She ate, she found favor in this person's eyes, and she has enough food to bring back to Naomi, this large amount of food. And she came back to the city, and she sees her mother-in-law and all that she brought, and she shows it to her, and she also brought back the extra food that she had left over. And you can try to almost imagine that the Naomi has this look of shock on her face. What just happened? I sent you out this morning not knowing if you're going to come back with anything, you know, telling you that maybe this isn't even such a good idea, and now you have regular food, you're full, you have a ton of barley you're bringing back. What is going, what's going on? So, Vatomer lachamosas, so her mother-in-law Naomi says to her, where did you gather all this today? What did you do? Yehi makireich baruch, the one who was generous to you should be recognized, you should be blessed. And she told over the whole story. And she said, Boaz, the person who did all these great things for me today, his name was Boaz. And it sort of, first of all, reminds us that as much as, you know, Ruth was having this very exciting day, Naomi was probably back at home all nervous, not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing where the next meal is going to come from. And she comes back and she appreciates everything that was done for her. She tells the entire story.
Slightly different.
Without all the details, but, well, what big difference is there? Okay.
I just remember the way she described what he said. It was a kind of Boaz related.
Later on there might be a difference.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You jumped the gun a little bit.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Sorry.
and it could be, again, I think it's the same thing, you know, when somebody comes back and the result looks too good, you almost begin to question whether they did it legitimately. You know, if somebody shows up in this fancy car and you don't think that they, you know, you don't know where it's coming from, so it makes you a little bit nervous for a second. Hey, okay, they want it in a raffle, whatever it is, you know. And that's almost what she was thinking. She's like, uh-oh, you know, she must have taken too much. She must have, you know, taken more than the halacha allowed. Maybe she didn't realize. And as she's getting more nervous, you can imagine the sudden change in the feeling when she hears the name Boaz, and she hears that person, who is really the only chance that she has that things are going to improve, that it was in fact Boaz. So it continues in Pasuk Chav, Atoma and Amila Chalosai, she says to her daughter-in-law, Baruch Hashem, Yishibas to Hashem, Asher Lozal Chastom, that he hasn't forgotten to do chesed, Asachayim v'samisim, both with those who are alive, with me and with you, and with those that have passed away, that his nephews and with his cousins, right. What's interesting and this may be something which is important, is that we don't know that Ruth knew who Boaz was. So all this was happening, and then that might be also part of why she was so bothered by or surprised by how nice he was being, because we don't know that when they arrived that Naomi gave her the family tree and told her, oh, you know, we have this Shmero lives over here and Boaz lives over there, and we're start playing Jewish geography and how we all connected. She might not have known any of it, and it certainly sounds like that from this pasuk, and that this pasuk really reveals that everything that happened is even more wondrous than we could have imagined. Because it's one thing if Ruth suddenly says, oh, you know, this is the same Boaz who was supposed to be nice to me, but it was really totally out of the ordinary. She didn't expect it at all, because she didn't know Boaz was related until right now. And now is when the concept, which is going to be important as we get into the other parts of the story, of this idea of being a goel, of being a redeemer, is first expressed by Naomi, that he is a very close relative. But Tomar Rusa Moaviyah, so what's Rusa's reaction? Gam ki omar elai imen arim ha-shalit hidvakin adim kilu es kol ha-katir ha-shalit, you should stay here until the harvest is finished. So the Medrash doesn't like the fact that she sort of puts Boaz in a bad light here, getting back to the Shidduch crisis. That here when Ruth tells it over, she says that he told me to stay together with the Ne'arim, which implies with the boys. And Boaz was very careful not to do that to her. And Boaz was very, very sensitive to her and told her that you can stay together with the women and not together with the men. And Boaz never said it. So again, it could be that it was unintentional on her part, and you know, in the excitement of telling over a story, you're not always careful about all the details. But in terms of Naomi, she probably was a little bit more surprised at this point, because she knows that Boaz is this great person, and to have said that probably would be a little shocking to her. But Tomer Naomi Aruska saw Tobi Tiki Tetsim Naarosav. So when she says it, she flips it and she says, you should stay there, but you should stay with the girls. Again, because she was a little bit, everything's going to be fine, but you have to realize which direction it should go. And she stayed there, and that was their source of food, that was their source of income, and she stayed with her mother-in-law until the story continues. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Shem will continue and try to finish up next time.